You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Good morning, Vancouver 601 on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Sweet, sweet Friday. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sorefeet, what are you waiting for?
Kintech, that's what you're waiting for. We got a big, big show ahead on a Friday. It's Canucks game day. A reminder, 4:30 from Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. It is the Canucks. It is the Preds. It is game three. Pre-game, post-game, and the actual game. You can hear it all right here on Sportsnet 650. Our guest list begins today at 7 o'clock. That means you have an entire hour of unfiltered, uninterrupted Halford and Brough to start the show. 7 o'clock, AJ from AJ's Pizza is going to join us. Another reminder there, $100 gift card to AJ's Pizza today for the best Ask Us Anything. It is Ask Us Anything Friday on the program. All you got to do is send an AUA, hashtag it AUA for Ask Us Anything. Sportsnet 650, 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We will pick a winner and we will announce it in the final segment of the show. After AJ at 7:05, Luke Gazdick is going to join us. Our weekly NHL insider from Sportsnet, ex-NHLer, is going to join us here at 7:30, live from Nashville. John Shorthouse is going to join the program, so we'll talk to him ahead of Game 3 tonight, which he will be on the call for. We'll also talk to him about Bob Cole, who, in case you missed it yesterday, the legendary hockey announcer, passed away at the age of 90. We'll talk to Shorty about Bob Cole's influence on his career at 7:30. At 8 o'clock, Rick Dhaliwal, Canucks insider from the Donnie and Dolly show on Czech TV, is going to join us. I mentioned the $100 gift card to AJ's. I also mentioned 4:30, a very pivotal Game 3 tonight between the Canucks and Preds from Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. Working in reverse on the guest list, 8 o'clock, Dhaliwal, 7:30, Shorthouse, 7:05, Gazdick, and then at 7 o'clock, it's AJ from AJ's Pizza. That's what's happening on the program today. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. Yesterday, the Canucks practiced in Nashville ahead of tonight's Game 3. The lines stayed the same. There was one change of significance that head coach Rick Tocchet made. It appears as though Elias Lindholm will be manning the net front on PP1, replacing Connor Garland.
Yeah, perhaps Lindholm can provide that net front presence, tip some pucks home. He's a pretty big body, get some rebounds. Assuming the Canucks can get some shots through, Tocchet was talking yesterday about the power play, which is 0-for-6 and has not been part of the solution in this series so far. Tocchet wants the power play to be more decisive. We've heard that word a lot. You know, move the puck quickly, don't hold on to the puck, and if you got a chance to shoot it, just rip it. And he wants it to be quicker paced as well. And I also wonder, not that Garland doesn't fight for his space out there, because he really does, but I think Tocchet wants his players to be like, hey, if Nashville is going to just stand there, stand in their space.
Sure.
Like, he's not saying interfere with them or anything, but, you know, stand in a shooting lane and then you can get out of the way.
right? They'll stay in that shooting lane, and
that's right.
And they'll block the shot. But you can get out of the way at the last minute if you fight for that position. I liked his quote yesterday. We're going to tee it up. And I think what he means by that is if the Preds really want to sit there and block all these shots by the Canucks, a few of them, the Canucks are going to make them hurt.
Yep.
At the very least, right? Like, none of these kind of like soft wristers that are going to be blocked easily, just tee it up and rip it. And, you know, they might get blocked, they might not, but if they do get blocked, they're going
to
hurt.
Right. So we'll throw to some audio now from following yesterday's practice, because I think it's an interesting point to bring up, is that everybody has been talking about all the different strategies you can employ to make sure that your shots get through and they don't get blocked. So Rick Tocchet acknowledged, yeah, there's some things that we can do. In fact, he said we can shoot for sticks and maybe try and get deflections. But then he also put in the caveat that you could also just let them keep trying to block them. Because it becomes increasingly difficult, what with all the bruises and potential broken bones that you can get from blocking shots. Maybe the key is to just keep teeing it up. Here's what Rick Tocchet had to say after yesterday's practice in Nashville.
Yeah, it's more second stick type of shots. Try to look for sticks instead of, around bodies. And tee it up. Guys want to block it, it's going to hurt. So I wouldn't turn down a shot if the guy's going to be right in front of me. So, yeah, we're going to tee it up tomorrow.
I mean, it makes sense. There is a certain level of dedication and bravery and, quite honestly, like recklessness for your own well-being and body to do. If you're going to do that once, like in a game seven, you're like, we're going to lay it all on the line tonight, guys. It's understandable. It's a lot harder to be like, remember how we laid it on the line in game two? Now we have to do it in games 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah, but it is dangerous, though, if you keep getting shots blocked, because sometimes they'll bounce and go the other way, right?
No, I get it.
Like, you don't want to just be shooting right into someone's shin pads. That doesn't even hurt that much.
Yeah, that's true. I think what Tocchet was...
You got to get them where it hurts.
Yeah.
Right, in the throat.
Right in the throat.
Or in the back, whatever. I do think...
Ryan McDonough's butt was blocking a bunch of shots.
It's true,
right?
It is very true.
He's a lot of padding there usually.
Yeah,
the kids still say badonkadonk, or is that no longer
you do.
A timely reference? I think there is the larger like explanation or the larger narrative here is that I don't think Tocchet wants the team or anyone to think that they have to radically alter their approach to the game, right? Like, yes, you need to get more shots through.
Yeah, you don't want to get in your heads too much where you're thinking too much.
Yeah, and then you're, like, moving around guys, and you're starting to move to unnatural positions on the ice or get out of, like, you get away from your staples and you get away from where guys expect you to be.
I honestly think it just comes down to quick puck movement. Like, you think about the game of basketball, right? When you're trying to get an open three, what do you have to do? Ball movement,
keep
right?
Moving the ball around.
Just keep moving the ball around and move it quick. And then once you got that chance, take the shot. And so in the case of hockey, once you get that chance, tee it up and rip it. And I think when he talks about being decisive, there is a certain guy that he is talking about most of all. And that is a player, Elias Pettersson, who caught up with IMAC for an exclusive interview with Sportsnet. You can read this at Sportsnet.ca, and Petey was pretty open with IMAC, and he was talking about how he might have just been too amped up for a few of these games in the Nashville series. He said, I just want it so bad. I'm probably being too honest, but I mean, I'm not going to shy away from anything. I haven't been that good these first two games, but I can only look forward. He also went on to say, it's probably my first real playoff with all this atmosphere. Remember, a lot of people talking about his time in the bubble and how good he was. And, this new management group, although the old management group seemed to hang their hat a lot on that bubble experience, this new management group has come in and basically said, yeah, that was nice. Doesn't mean all that much, though.
What did I say prior to this, the start of this postseason? I said, I'm considering this Elias Pettersson's playoff debut.
Yeah.
Like, all due respect to the bubble and what happened and how good he was, this is a real playoff. This is the first time in his career that he's going to the playoffs. That's how I viewed it.
So he said, I've just been so fired up. Maybe I've come away a little bit from what makes me good. He said, adrenaline is good, But with adrenaline, maybe I try to play too hard or make things too hard instead of just playing the game and letting the game come to you. Maybe the emotion has gotten to me a little bit. And what Rick Tocchet said about Elias Pettersson was, you know, he liked, first of all, he liked that Petey owned his bad game after game two and went and faced the media. And he liked that he had a really good practice yesterday, that he was smiling. And he said, that's what I need from Petey. And I like this part. He should try to embrace all this and have fun with it. Because as much as there's pressure on these guys, as much as, you know, if things don't go well, it'll get uncomfortable. I think he's saying, like, guys, this is what you train for. This is what you've been dreaming about. He was saying, you know, like our game tonight, there's going to be a lot of people watching. Isn't this what we want? Isn't this why we play? Like, to be playing in front of these crowds and, you know, millions of people watching on TV. That's the whole idea of it. So embrace it and have fun with it. And sometimes it looks like, you know, when Petey's really struggling, he's just like, he takes it so seriously and he takes himself so seriously that maybe he forgets that, I don't know, he's like, you're supposed to have fun with this.
Well, Tocchet actually spoke about that. We've got some audio here.
Supposed to be enjoyable, not like fun, like, hey, let's just go out, like, you know, you got a job to do, but this is still what you like to do.
Right, and Tocchet spoke about this yesterday, that, hey, we've got a chance to have some fun here. Like, we can embrace the villain role. We're playing, and everyone else is watching us. Like, he made a point of saying, hey, there's a bunch of teams that wish they were in our position right now. They're on the outside of the playoff picture looking in, like Ottawa or Montreal. Like, you know, he didn't call them out by name. That was my personal touch on that one. But
he called them losers.
Yeah, repeatedly. Yeah. And then, no, okay, anyway. Here's Rick Tocchet on the team's mindset going into Game 3 in Nashville.
Yeah, no, I think it's really important, you know, and I preach it all year, you know, I hate roller coasters, you know, mentality. You got to be even keel. You know, once the game is over, obviously you look at certain things, you talk to certain individuals. You know, we need some guys to get going, they know it, but you move on. You know, you know, our job is to build people up, not to tear them down, and I think that's the same thing. Even after a win, you know, we shouldn't be pounding each other, you know, we're not singing and dancing after a win. We just got to be even keel. It's 1-1. You know, it's two evenly matched teams, and it's going to be an exciting game. And we got to embrace the excitement. It's going to be a lot of fun to play this game. I'm excited.
Also, he hates roller coasters. Rick Tocchet, not a roller coaster guy.
Yeah.
So let that be known. The Pettersson, you know, you've called it now. You're on record saying that Petey's going to have big game in Game 3. He's going to go off tonight and go off Young King in Game 3. I can understand why you threw that out there. One, I know you're jealous of me having all the hot takes. You wanted to get in on the action, on the caliente, if you will. But also,
once in a while, I just like to have that gut feel take. And Game 2, as badly as it went, you know, I saw in that game what Petey is saying, where he's saying,
yes,
like,
yes,
I'm trying too hard, right?
Like, and
it started really when he came out of the gates flying and like hitting guys, and I think that's maybe what he meant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, that's, well, I'm not like it's good if I get in on the forecheck, but I'm not right. I'm not that guy. I'm the cerebral player.
The one to me that encompassed kind of what he's talking about, or maybe he's doing too much or trying too much or overthinking, was the pass to Garland in the slot that was like a, you know, it was like a saucer pass into his shin pads where it was like just
didn't even hit his shin pads.
Right.
It was just straight through.
Yeah.
Foot off the ice didn't.
And like, it was the kind of play, honestly, where you're like, you're trying to make so much happen in one play when the most simple thing would make the play most effective. I know that's
shoot the puck.
Yeah. It's like, but
be decisive on that.
And I get what he was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can see it. It's like, there's a great opportunity to catch everyone going one way and firing it back the other. And there's a chance to hit Garland in the slot.
He'd done it a couple of games ago when he made that nice cross ice pass to Hoglander, right?
Yes,
everyone
exactly.
was thinking Petey's going to shoot, but you know, and he made a nice pass, but that pass to Hoglander was there. The one to Garland wasn't.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes when you're a star player, and it's not necessarily even about being selfless, but, like, sometimes the star players will understand, like, you've got a magnetism to you on the ice or on the playing surface where your biggest attribute is drawing people towards you because they have to pay attention where you are all the time, right? Did you watch Ted Lasso?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the star striker, Jamie Tartt, and he talks about don't play to me, play through me, that thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes the really cerebral players will do that, and they'll use their sort of magnetism against their opponents. But at the same time, you're a star player for a reason. Like, you're the one that's got the elite finishing ability. You're the one that everyone wants to drive the bus. And I think that's what Tockett was speaking about more. It was like, hey, we want you to take this thing by the groin or whatever.
And take it by the groin.
Take it by the groin. And make it your own. So it will be very interesting to see how PD plays tonight.
Yeah, we got a few texts in kind of expressing doubt on what PD was saying. He said, unsigned text here into the Dunbar Lumber text line. PD talking about being too nervous and excited about the first two games of the series, but what's his excuse for the last one third of the season where he was also not very good? Hey, fair enough. Fair enough. We'll see how PD performs tonight. All I'm saying is that I'm basing my take that he's going to be good based on game two, where he was involved out there. He just made a lot of bad decisions and seemed to be forcing it or, I don't know, not playing his game. I think he's going to have a good game tonight. If I'm wrong about that, then I don't have to face the consequences because it's a weekend.
Okay, so we wanted to carve out a significant period of time in the opening segment here to speak about Bob Cole. So for those that are unaware at this point, Bob Cole, whose rich baritone voice and lively language was the soundtrack of many of your youth, especially on Saturday night. The soundtrack to hockey in Canada for an awfully long time. Cole passed away Wednesday night in Newfoundland at the age of 90, surrounded by his family. This was passed along by his daughter, Megan Cole, yesterday. I'm sure most of you saw this, and I'm sure most of you were flooded with memories when the news came down, because for a lot of you, Bob Cole was the sound and the voice of hockey as you grew up.
Yeah, I actually got a little emotional last night when this news came out, and I started remembering all the great calls that Bob Cole had had. I got nostalgic. And for me, Bob Cole was the official voice of a big game. I just loved the sound of his voice and the way he was able to capture the big moments in a game. I think the key was that he never said too much in those big moments, or he didn't try to get too fancy with his words. He didn't overthink it. Sometimes it was just punctuating a goal with the name of the player who scored. And really the best was when the home team scored a big goal, because as Elliot Friedman wrote at sportsnet.ca, really good piece if you want to read it, he called Cole the best ever at riding the waves of a crowd's emotion, flowing with it, rising with it, allowing it to be heard. And, you know, I was reading a story by Bruce Arthur in the Toronto Star, and it was a really good column, really funny, actually. And he said that there were times when Bob Cole would, after a big goal, he would almost like physically restrain his color guy, whether it was Harry Neal or someone else, like, don't say anything. I've said the goal. Now let the crowd cheer. Let the pictures tell the story. Wait, 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 wait. And then you can say something. And, you know, one of the best calls I've ever heard in hockey came in a big game between two teams that I didn't really care about. And it was in 1993. This was the last time a Canadian team won the Stanley Cup. And it was a goal by Eric Desjardins, a defenseman for the Montreal Canadiens, against Wayne Gretzky and the LA Kings. And the Kings had gone up 1-0 in the series, and this was game two at the Montreal Forum. It had gone into overtime. Desjardins had already scored twice in the game, including late in the game after the Montreal Canadiens had challenged Marty McSorley's stick to be a little, remember that? Remember that when that was a thing? There was a whole year of like challenging. So Marty McSorley's stick was deemed illegal. So Desjardins scores on the power play. And then it goes into overtime, and then this happens.
Gretzky went after it. short side. Here he is again. Scores. Desjardins. And the Canadiens win in overtime. His third goal of the game. And the series is a brand new one.
Like, it's just so simple, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Desjardins. His third goal of the game, and the Canadiens win, and the series is a brand new one.
I love the wording on that. He didn't say, it's a brand new series. It's the series is a brand new one. Yeah. And it just has a better ring to it.
He just knew which words to hit and how to do it. And, you know, as Elliot wrote, riding the waves of a crowd's emotion, flowing with it, rising with it, allowing it to be heard. There's so many big goals that I remember Bob Cole calling, Joe Sakic in the Salt Lake Olympics, where he almost like, he's like, Gio Sakic, right? Like, it was just, it really was perfect. And I found, you know, so my mom is from St. John's, Newfoundland. So Bob Cole being from Newfoundland, I also had a soft spot for him in that way. And I was always quite protective of him in a way. Like, when I was on the radio show and on the radio and people would text in, and as Bob was getting a little bit older and saying, you know, Bob was losing his fastball. He was starting to, you know, mispronounce names, and that was true. Right. But I didn't care. He could have called all the names wrong. I just, like, he was the voice of hockey for me. And, you know, I don't know if we've got the John Cooper audio from yesterday. Maybe we can find it later. But John Cooper, after a really tough loss for his Tampa Bay Lightning, basically took the time to say, okay, look, we're down 3-0 in a series, but I want to take the time to talk about the passing of Bob Cole. And he basically said, I wouldn't be here if not for Bob Cole, because Bob Cole was one of these people that helped contribute to the love of the game for me and the passion of the game, and me watching those games on a Saturday night and falling in love with the game. And I feel the same way, you know, like, there's certain announcers for me, and Bob Cole was probably number one for hockey. They just, you know, whether they knew they were doing it or not, they helped me fall in love with the game. Mm-hmm. And I remember a goal that Trevor Linden scored against the Calgary Flames back in 1989 when Bob Cole was on the call. And that was the first series that I can remember being really, really into. And when the Canucks lost that one, made little Jason cry. We've talked about this on the radio. But, like, these guys, I don't know how much they appreciate the great ones, how much they influence people to get involved with the game. Even, you know, the younger guys like Sidney Crosby and Connor McDavid even was talking about how much Bob Cole influenced his love of the game. And, you know, I was just really struck by his passing yesterday, because I started remembering all those great calls that he had. Let's play the Mario Lemieux one as we head to break, and we got an open segment on the other side. So feel free to text in any of your memories of Bob Cole, or talk about the Canucks ahead of Game 3 or anything else in the NHL. Dunbar Lumber, with 3 stores to serve you, in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Butis in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Text line, Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. Here's Bob Cole calling Mario Lemieux's incredible goal in the Stanley Cup Final against the Minnesota North Stars.
Here's Lemieux. The center penalty coming up. Look at Lemieux. Oh, my heavens. What a goal. What a move. Lemieux. Oh, baby.
All playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Get your keys to an all-star collection of Kubota products at one of their 6 locations across BC this spring. Visit DLEAMC.com.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
Linden looking back, gets it to the line. Here's a shot by Babbage. Oh, big rebound!
everyone, on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today, we are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
Did we honestly do the Fiesta music over one of Bob Cole's calls?
Yeah, I was thinking that, remembering the legendary Bob Cole on Fiesta Friday.
I mean, look.
He would want it that way.
He would.
Yeah.
He would have a rum and Coke and
exactly.
He'd enjoy it.
He's up on the beach in the sky right now, sipping his rum and Coke.
That's right. Now, I will say, yesterday was obviously incredibly sad, but also, in remembering Bob Cole, it brought out a lot of great memories for people because he had so many iconic calls that a lot of people affiliate or associate with, like, some of the best times of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, and a lot of younger hockey fans, I think, just didn't even know those calls and got to see all of them. Like, it wasn't just, like, one or two. You're looking at, like, 50 iconic hockey calls that a lot of younger hockey fans probably just don't know.
Yeah. When you're the voice of something, and, you know, we talk about being the voice of hockey. For a lot of people, like, he's one of, like, the more preeminent voices that this country, regardless of industry, has had over the last few decades. And he got the benefit of not having to call, you know, you're working in real hard news. Like, you're probably going to be the voice of some very unfortunate events. Bob mm-hmm. Cole, the majority of them were these great moments for people. Celebratory moments, right? Where everyone could unite and feel good about something.
Yeah. I guess when Mark Messier lifted the cup at Madison Square Garden.
I said sometimes.
Truly.
I said sometimes.
Truly an incredible moment. And
I said
I will
sometimes.
Never forget about it.
I'd go so far to say he is the most famous Canadian voice.
He's one of them.
In anything.
One of them for
sure.
Not
just sports, just like the most famous Canadian voice.
So Jason asked for texts prior to going to break, 650, 650.
Got some great ones
text
here.
Line.
Craig in Campbell River, my dad got a VHS tape of hockey highlights from a tire store back in the early 90s.
Respect.
Great plays from great games. It was hosted by Ron McLean and was, as the title advertised, all the plays and games were called by Bob Cole. And I wore that VHS out. I watched it so much. Not just the voice of the NHL, but the voice of my childhood. He was a massive part of what hockey means to Canadians. Eric and Dawson Creek, Bob Cole was one of the only announcers that I would watch teams I hate or didn't care for just to listen to him. The way he called the game was just perfect. Growing up, I always wanted to try play-by-play because of Mr. Cole. I'm almost 30 now, but just got a chance last year, and it was truly a dream come true. I wouldn't be a hockey fanatic like I am if it wasn't for Mr. Cole. Hockey lost an icon. Jim in Vancouver, one last text here. I grew up laying on the carpet in the front room on Saturday night with my dad sitting behind me in his Lazy Boy. Then you'd hear the words, "Let's go up to Bob and Harry in the booth." And that was Saturday night. That was growing up in Canada. Absolutely the best memories were his calls.
Okay, we're going to get into...
That's a great text, by the way.
Yeah, that was very, very well said. And if you want to continue weighing in, Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. John Shorthouse is going to join us at 7:30. We'll talk about the influence that Bob Cole had on his career. Because, you know, locally, Slay the Dragon, every time I've ever, like, gone out with Shorty and you go into the general public, like, people will come up and either reference that or say, like, you are the soundtrack to my youth. Like, it is a really powerful thing. So we'll talk to Shorty about the influence that Bob Cole had on him as a broadcaster. And that's coming up at 7:30. But right now, it is what happened for the entire first hour of this program. And there's a lot that happened last night that we still haven't gotten into. There was a report floating online on the social medias, X. You might call it Twitter. I call it X. That's just a joke. Nobody calls it X. About Thatcher Demko's playing future in these playoffs. The report suggested that Thatcher Demko was going to be out for the remainder of the playoffs. I believe it was Sarah Sivian that had it out there on Twitter, formerly of The Athletic, now the Too Many Men podcast. Anyway, Elliot Friedman took the opportunity to dig into it, investigate a little bit more. Here's what Elliot Friedman had to say about the report that Thatcher Demko was going to be out for the remainder of the playoffs.
So there was a report on Thursday night that Thatcher Demko was out for the year, which caught me by surprise because I had heard earlier on Thursday there was some optimism about Demko's situation. I think Rick Dhaliwal reported the same. I mean, at this time of year, crazy stuff flies around. We'll have to see. But initially I was told with Demko, don't guess. Just don't guess. And again, I heard on Thursday there was potentially some optimism. And the other thing was he traveled with the team, as Dan Murphy reported. And the thing about that is you don't travel with the team if you're going to be out a long time, because then you're a distraction, or you need, either you've had a procedure done, which we're not expecting, or you're so badly bedridden or whatever that you just can't go. To be able to go with the team, that's actually a significant and good thing. So we'll see how this all plays out, but I'll just say that one caught me by surprise because, like I said, I'd heard that there was actually some positivity there.
So, you know, I mean, this could all end up being just a discussion about semantics. Like, if the Canucks don't get out of the first round and Demko doesn't play, technically he was out for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could always hang your hat on that, I suppose. But
I mean, originally what I heard was that he might be able to come back for the conference finals. So the reports are all over the map right now.
I think what Elliot said about, you know, it's a crazy time and there's a lot of stuff out there probably applies best to this, because there's mm-hmm. a lot of people with a lot of different theories. And we're just here to pass everything along and try and give the full picture of what may or may not be going on with Thatcher Demko.
Did Murph say he was moving around all right? Was Murph, like, testing him?
Yeah. He's traveling with the team, like, but he is in stasis.
I was throwing the ball for him out in the backyard, and he looked like he was moving pretty good.
Then
like,
he got tired.
Murph, I think that was your dog.
Yeah, then he had a nap.
But no, really, like, if a guy's traveling with the team, isn't that, like, slightly positive?
Who knows?
He is a leader on the team. I can see them wanting to bring him along just to be a leader.
Here's the thing.
He's in a box.
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? I know people want to know, and this is one of the, I mean, you always talk about the double-edged sword of a frenzied hockey market. Is that people are so desperate to know that any information that's out there will be amplified because people want to know as much as humanly possible. And this is where we end up with the discussion about whether Thatcher Demko traveling is significant to his recovery from an injury, right? Anyway.
Let's talk about some other stuff that happened in the NHL, because there's a couple teams down 3-0, mm-hmm. which means house of positivity. There's a couple teams up 3-0. So congratulations to the Florida Panthers, who are up 3-0 on the Tampa Bay Lightning. And the Carolina Hurricanes have taken a 3-0 lead on Bo Horvat and the New York Islanders.
Yep.
The Canes 3-0 lead on the Isles, not all that surprising. The Panthers 3-0 lead on Tampa Bay, maybe a little bit surprising.
Every game's been tight. That actually, the game three was the first game that hadn't been decided by a single goal. And, you know, there hasn't been a I've watched the series on and off. There hasn't been a ton to choose from between the two teams, other than the fact that Florida has emerged with that one more decisive goal in all three.
You can have a
so
close
far.
Sweep.
You can.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
But the New York Islanders, I don't think anyone really expected them to get by Carolina. It was them and Washington mm-hmm. who were the big underdogs in the playoffs. Washington's down 2-0. I guess they must play tonight.
Yes.
I really do, though, wonder what's going to happen to both those teams this offseason if they get swept out of the playoffs, or if they just go out with a whimper. Maybe there's a gentleman sweep in there. Starting with Tampa Bay, obviously you wonder about the future of Steven Stamkos there.
Sure.
If Julian Breezeball looks at that team and goes, we'd like to bring Stamkos back.
By the way, you know who scored in all three games for Tampa Bay in
yeah.
the series?
Steve Stamkos. Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? He's still a very, very good player.
I'm going to say this. With that series, it would not surprise me if Tampa Bay pushes this thing to mm-hmm. like 7. I would not be surprised. Because Cooper...
I'd be surprised.
One thing about John Cooper is he, in order to be a coach for that long, you really have to be able to understand what buttons to push with your team, when to push on the gas and when to... What was that?
It's the...
So random.
The B-sharps.
How did you have that?
For if we talk about Cooper...
Oh,
you guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, it don't make sense. It's just so That's like the ultimate deep cut.
I love it. I didn't see it coming, but sometimes those are the best.
How do I stump you guys with a Simpsons
reference? It wasn't a star. That was the last thing I expected to hear in that moment. I mean, it's great. It's sad.
Let's do this. Okay, I'm going to do something that's probably not going to happen this offseason, but if it does, John Cooper has been fired by the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Cuckoo, but you.
It is a fitting ending to his time in Tampa Bay, that song. Anyway, the Stamkos thing, and, you know, he said it clear as day in his post-game remarks. He said, look, and he dropped the look, which is great. He said, look, there's been 3-1 goal games, and we've been on the wrong end of all of them. And to be fair, yesterday was a 1-goal game. They gave up an empty netter with 32 seconds left. So, but now the interesting thing is that if they don't come back and make this a series, and they do, say, go out in 4 or 5 games, all of us, I'm not saying that Cooper will be on the chopping block or anything, but that's consecutive first-round exits.
Does the word stale ever come up?
Sure, 100%.
With Tampa Bay?
They had their
They've had the same guys there for a long, long time, and they're all really good. Like, Kucherov is having a terrific season, and I'm not saying that, you know, Braden Point, Steven Stamkos, Anthony Cirelli, Victor Hedman, they're all still good players, but yeah, sometimes you just wonder if it does get a little bit stale.
Now, I want to...
And would Julian Brisebois see it that way? Would Julian Brisebois have the guts to say, okay, I know we've had a lot of success here, but not recently, and I want to do something that's really going to shake up this group?
Well, that's where I wonder if it's telling Stamkos thanks, but see you later, because then you've got your the face of the franchise and your captain leaving. Mm-hmm. And you've got that cap space to go and do something with
the blue line.
Yeah, really interesting, right? So maybe that's the move, but
I want to talk about the Islanders and their offseason. If the Isles go out, you know, the person that I wonder about is Lou Lamoriello. I know that the owners love him. I know that he is legendary in hockey, but he's also into his 80s now. And if you look at this Islanders team and how much long-term money they've committed to players, and none of them are superstars. Wow. And I think that's a problem with this. That's the like they've got a good number of good players. Some of them you might even call very good, but there's no stars on this team.
Well, there was one. And that was Ilya Sorokin after he finished second in Vezina voting last year. And everyone thought this is going to be the next great Russian goalie. This is going to be a star in the NHL for a long time. And the Islanders rewarded him with an 8-year, $66 million contract extension that doesn't even begin until next season.
Does any team have more money committed overall than the New York Islanders? Like, someone would have to do the math on that.
Vegas?
But maybe Vegas does. Yeah. But like you look at Barzal, he's got a long-term contract. Mm-hmm. Horvat's got a long-term contract. Pierre Engvall's got a long-term contract. And you know, on the back end, they're probably going to give Noah Dobson one to match the ones already given to Adam Pellick and Ryan Pulock.
But the reason I brought up the Sorokin thing is that Lamoriello, who, as you mentioned, is the guy that's, you know, signing the contracts here. He's the one putting pen to paper and inking all these guys. So he signs Sorokin, and that's a monster deal. He hires Patrick Waugh. Patrick Waugh's decision to start these playoffs is go game one and game two with Semyon Varlamov. They lose. They need a win in game three. He turns it over to Sorokin. Sorokin lasts 14 shots, allows 3 goals, and then midway through the second period, it was a weird time to pull someone because it was 3-1. Waugh takes Sorokin out, puts Varlamov back in. They don't make Sorokin available for comment after the game. Varlamov is presumably the guy, again, moving forward. And Waugh deflects any sort of questions about why he made the change or what's going on in net. So I'm looking at this and I'm saying, with regards to what you were talking about all of these contracts that they've locked in and the future of Lamoriello and the guy that signed them, has Patrick Waugh come in and just looked at this and been like, what we are right now is a fringe playoff team. And unless we make some radical changes, we're going to be a fringe playoff team where all the pieces of this fringe playoff team are locked in long term. I do wonder
if Patrick Waugh locked in long term.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. If they're going to have a significant change, I would presume that they brought him in to point out what needs to be changed, right? It was a new, fresh set of eyes.
Has he been way more chill than you expected?
Unbelievably chill.
Like, has he been meditating or something? What's going on?
No, I wonder if he knows that this is like step one in a long journey. Like,
I didn't create this mess.
Yeah, like you don't get too worked up. Like, you're the guy that's brought in to do the autopsy, so you have to be sort of clinical when you do it. The goalie thing is wild, though, especially since, you know, I'm not sure if all you youths out there are aware, but Patrick Waugh was a pretty good goalie back in his day. So any goalie decisions that he makes are amplified, right?
Like, what? Even Varlamov signed long-term.
That's
it's
what
so,
I'm saying.
It's so weird.
Mm-hmm. Laddie, I was doing this. I would love to get
it's
your...
It's like you understand sometimes why you'd go long-term on a player if you want to shave something off your current cap, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost like a win-now move to go long-term on a bunch of players, and then you're like, okay, we might have to deal with this later, but, you know, right now we are locked and loaded.
So
the Islanders aren't even close to that. They're like, barely made the playoffs. They shouldn't have made the playoffs,
yeah, you have
really.
You have a chance to lock up a 34-year-old goalie to a 5-year deal. You got to do it.
So really quickly, before we get to the NFL draft stuff, can you explain to me what's gone on and what will go on in net for the Islanders? Why has Sorokin gone from being the runner-up for a Vezina to a guy that can barely get minutes in the playoffs?
Well, if you look at the advanced numbers going into the playoffs, Varlamov was actually the better of the two goaltenders in the regular season. So I think he just
made a judgment call.
I think he just made a judgment call. Varlamov's his guy from back in Colorado as well. He knows him more, so it was probably a comfort thing. But, man, it was sad to see when Sorokin got taken out. Did you see him in the tunnel after?
He was not happy.
He didn't take his mask off, didn't do anything. He just kind of stood there in the tunnel for the rest of the period.
Mm-hmm. Could that contract go terribly? I mean, he's 28 now. He's not, like, 23 or anything.
Well, that's kind of what I was saying.
I think he wasn't horrible. He was just worse than Varlamov had a good season. So I think he was just the lesser of the two goaltenders, which is why Waugh went with Varlamov.
Okay, we need to talk about what happened at the NFL draft last night in Detroit. That's right, Detroit.
That's a reference to Bob Cole.
So a very, very historic draft. For the first time ever, 5 quarterbacks taken in the top 10 picks. The run of QBs began, not surprisingly. Everyone knew it was going to happen, and it finally did. The Bears took Caleb Williams from USC with the number 1 pick, as expected. At number 2, the Washington Commanders took Jalen McDaniels from LSU, as expected. Then the Patriots took Drake May from North Carolina at number 3, as expected. So this marked the 4th time in NFL history, the first time since 2021, that 3 quarterbacks went with the first 3 picks. It was a quarterback-heavy draft.
So many people are going to get fired.
I know.
That was expected. That was expected.
Those were all expected.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're all going to pan out, right?
Now, but the NFL draft is not the NFL draft unless there's some real drama and intrigue. And the drama and intrigue happened with the 8th overall pick when the Atlanta Falcons stepped to the podium and selected Michael Penix Jr. from the University of Washington. And they cut to Michael Penix Jr. on his couch with his family. And he looked just about as shocked as everybody else that he was on his way to Atlanta. Why? Because the Atlanta Falcons, in free agency, made the biggest quarterback move of the offseason, mm-hmm. bringing in Kirk Cousins, formerly of the Minnesota Vikings, for a 4-year deal with $100 million guaranteed.
Yeah, they cut to Kirk Cousins, and he was having a money fight with someone. And he was like, what? They drafted Penix?
Then he stopped momentarily to be like, hold on. So it was a very, very bizarre pick, to put it mildly, because nobody knew this was coming, including Kirk Cousins. According to multiple reports, through Kirk Cousins' agent, apparently, Kirk Cousins was shocked and disappointed that the Falcons made this move. The craziest part is that there's reports out there that they didn't tell Cousins they were going to do this until they were on the clock. So, like, in those moments where you've got to make this huge decision for the future of your franchise, the general manager, Terry Fontenot, was like, we should call Kirk. We should let him know. We should just give him a heads up.
Didn't it look like the owner was a little confused about Arthur Blank? There's video of the owner and the GM talking, and it looked like the GM was like running the owner through the reasons why he made the decisions. Now, we're obviously, you know, assuming a lot just by looking at a video, but it was a lot of people were noting it.
Cousins' agent is a guy by the name of Mike McCartney. He told Mike Garofalo from NFL Network the following quote: "Yes, it was a big surprise. We had no idea this was coming. The truth is, the whole league had no idea this was coming. We got no heads up. Kirk got a call from the Falcons when they were on the clock. That was the first we heard. It never came up in conversations." Falcons general manager and their head coach, Raheem Morris, were left to explain this mess in the aftermath. Here's what it sounded like.
This question is for Terry or Raheem, whichever one of you called Kirk when you were on the clock and you tell me about it. What's his reaction?
Well, that's a private. We wouldn't share that, you know. And obviously, we
reactions are pretty private, right?
Yeah.
You know, he got called on the clock, obviously, because it's a sensitive time with the issues of what you got going on. It's never a right time to talk to a quarterback about those things, and reactions are always going to be private when it comes to those things, unless Kirk decides to tell you some of those things, or whatever the case may be. But he's a competitor, just like us all, and you can always expect those things to go just like you kind of think.
But his agent's kind
of you should have left that
shocked
word in there.
And dismayed and so forth. That they were informed on the clock.
The reporter followed up by saying, so there's a report out there from Cousins' agent that he was shocked and dismayed. And then you can hear the GM, Terry Fontenot, go, yeah. and then Morris tried to chime in with, he was informed on the clock. So I don't know how this came to be.
So what do you think Kirk Cousins is most frustrated about? Is it the fact that now he's going to have to deal with this drama of... I'm just going through the options. Uh-huh. Is it him now I've got this guy breathing down my neck, probably want to get into a game. And as soon as I have a bad game, people will be calling for this guy. Or is it more like you had a chance to improve the team dramatically with this pick and you chose a quarterback?
No, it's the former. It's the former 100%, because not only did they just draft his replacement, who's going to be in the room with him, it's a brand new room for him. He's never been in Atlanta before. He's never taken a snap behind center as an Atlanta Falcon. If you want to talk about getting your start off in a new city off to a bad start, it's having your direct competition right beside you from day one. They didn't even give him a chance to go in and fail or succeed. That's the crazy part to me, is they didn't take one look at what Kirk Cousins looked like as an Atlanta Falcon before drafting his replacement. And if you're going to do that, the only thing I could see that made sense here was if they were so worried about this getting out and so worried about someone saying, well, Atlanta's going to take Penix at 8. We're going to jump ahead of them to try and take Penix, that they had to keep it quiet, which means don't even tell the agent. If that's the play, that's the only thing that makes a lick of sense. Otherwise, you've created this huge storm. And what you've said is, between the time that we gave Kirk Cousins $100 million in guaranteed money to now, we had a fundamental shift where we fell so in love with Michael Penix that we had to make this move. And if that's the case, you better really be in love with Michael Penix Jr.
It was actually funny when I saw the pick, because I wasn't actually watching the draft at the time. I saw it on my phone. I'm like, wow, Penix went 8th overall? And I had completely forgotten that the Falcons had signed Kirk Cousins. So I was like, wow, I'm surprised that he went 8th overall, period.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, wait a minute.
It's crazy.
Didn't the Falcons go out and get Kirk Cousins?
Yeah.
It was a big day for the Huskies. Rome Odunze, the wide receiver, went 9th overall to the Chicago Bears. And we had discussed that possibility yesterday on the show. So Caleb Williams out of USC goes 1st overall to the Bears, and he will have a pretty good young receiver to develop some chemistry with in Rome Odunze. The Seattle Seahawks, they addressed their defensive line with defensive tackle Byron Murphy out of Texas. Yeah, they needed to do something on it. The Seahawks have a lot of work to do.
Mike McDonald said in the offseason that they're trying to build a wall in the middle, across the southern border. They're trying to build a wall up the middle, meaning he saw the tape from last year and saw them get gouged at the line of scrimmage, and they needed a big defensive tackle, a run stopper. So Murphy is 6 foot, 300 pounds. He was awesome at Texas last year. He's a second-team AP All-American, Big 12 Defensive Lineman of the Year. So this was sort of something where McDonald knew exactly what he wanted to do, and he went out and addressed the need in the draft, which is funny because Atlanta, the biggest concern, and as I go back to this, the biggest concern for Atlanta last year was they had no sacks. They had a terrible pass rush. Mm-hmm. They couldn't get after the quarterback. And when you talked about shouldn't you draft someone that can help you now? No defensive players were taken at 8. Mm-hmm. It was all offensive players. You could have taken anybody on defense.
Yeah, the Seahawks got, I think, was it the second defensive player off the board?
The defense was null and void yesterday at the NFL draft. It was all offense. So, by the way, the quarterbacks, in case you missed it, it's actually going to be a really fun year if you're into the changing of the guard and the new quarterbacks, because Minnesota traded up, to take future bust J.J. McCarthy at 10. And then Denver took Bo Nix at 12. So you're talking about so many guys right now. And let's be honest. Some people are texting in and saying, oh, well, you know, play the long game. You know, you drafted Penix like what they did with Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers. It's like, yeah, but they didn't spend the 8th overall pick on Jordan Love when Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback. When you take a quarterback in the top 10, you're almost nowadays, you're almost expecting him to play right away.
Yeah.
Like
he gets a massive signing bonus.
Yeah. Like you don't sit around and be like, well, we're going to let him like marinate for 3 years. Like you got to play. Like that's kind of the thing. So I'll be very curious to see how that all plays out as the NFL season gets underway. Okay. Coming up on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650, huge 7 o'clock hour. AJ from AJ's Pizza is going to join us. Luke Gaznik from Sportsnet is going to join us. John Shorthouse from Nashville is going to join us as well. And before we go to break, I need to tell you, all of our playoff coverage here on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Sky Avenue Kitchen and Lounge. Discover Surrey's newest luxury dining experience. Experience the richness of a Canadian cuisine prepared by a Michelin-recommended chef. Reserve your table today at skyavenue.com. 7 o'clock hour coming up. You're listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.